You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today, we are in Fontenay-le-Comte.
Où sommes-nous, Lionel?
Ah, we are in the Vendée, outside a magnificent hotel. Richard, you've absolutely excelled yourself with this.
Why, thank you, Lionel. It's wonderful, isn't it?
Can we stay here for 3 weeks?
We it's very up and down, the quality of the accommodation. But I felt we needed an early treat just to get us off to a good flying start on the tour.
Oh, it's put a smile on my face. We're in the countryside, tucked away. I'm looking up at the turret. We're staying on the second floor of this magnificent chateau.
My shower is in the turret.
Yeah. Well, Francois's got his swimming trunks on already, so we should really crack on with stage one of the 2018 Tour de France.
Francois's not wearing his swimming trunks in the shower. He's going to wear them to go swimming.
In the swimming pool. My name's Richard Moore. I'm with Lionel Burney.
Hello.
And Francois Thomazeau.
Hi there.
Welcome back, Francois. You join us for our second year on the Tour de France.
It's amazing, yeah. I have the impression I've done that all my life.
Yeah.
Well, listen, you can't remember the tour without the cycling podcast.
That's
now.
Right. It never happened, you know. Was there a tour before the cycling podcast? It was something else.
So this is number two with the cycling podcast. The other 26 reduced to almost nothing in comparison. Wow.
Okay, so a lot happened today, stage one. It didn't look for a lot of the stage like much was going to happen. And then it all happened in the final sort of 15 minutes or so. There's a lot going on. Lionel, you can give us a tale of the attack. Before you do, bear in mind, there's a lot of pressure on you.
No, because I'm not.
At the recent women's tour, Orla Chenoui raised the bar.
Yeah, with literary references.
Report.
Yeah,
yeah. I don't want any references in there, as has been suggested, to the recent England-Sweden football match. This place is by astonishing coincidence, but this place is owned by a Swedish gentleman, and his Swedish family were here watching a football match. A football match that will not be mentioned.
No,
not once.
They were a bit grim-faced, unfortunately. Anyone with
crying
an English
in the swimming pool? That's terrible.
Yeah, with an English persuasion. Just on that. This morning, you, Richard, interviewed Egan Bernal, a Colombian. Francois, you interviewed Tobias Ludvigsson, a Swede.
The only Swede in the peloton, yeah.
England have so far knocked out Colombia and Sweden from the World Cup. So can somebody please interview Christian Koren if Croatia win against Russia this evening?
By events.
Well, it will.
Or Ilnur Zakarin.
Well, I interviewed Chris Froome more or less, and all the guys I've interviewed in the World Cup. So interviewing Chris Froome, for me, sounds like a very good idea.
Well, you did interview Chris Froome today because he was caught up in a crash towards the end. It had looked very much like an uneventful stage from Noirmoutier on Lille to Fontenay-le-Comte, starting on the island and crossing over the main road bridge to the mainland. Quite an attractive start. Conjures up memories of 1999 and 2005 when there was a big crash on the Passage du Gua, which is the mostly submerged causeway, which also links the island to the mainland. Of course, 2005, Lance Armstrong caught Jan Ullrich on that on the time trial that went across the road bridge. No such drama as they rolled out today. In fact, with all the talk about how exciting the battle to get into the early break is on the opening stage of the tour, there was no drama whatsoever. Three riders simply rode away. And as we predicted over breakfast, they came from the wildcard teams. There was Jérôme Cousin of Direct Energy, Kevin Le Danois of Fortuneo Samsic, and Johan Afredo of Wanty Group Gobert.
I'm a little bit excited also because when we come by the bus on the road and you can see all the people around the road, the road, it's wonderful. So I feel good and I want to do something great. And something great for me, it's not to win a stage. It's something great. It's just give a smile to a boy.
So you're not going to be cautious this year. You're going to be in breakaways again if you have a chance.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I know that I'm not the best climber, I'm not the best sprinter. What I can do?
Yeah, of course.
Things, and I can take the break and try to do my best. And just like last year with Fine, we never know. On the first week of the tour, all the bench is very nervous, very stressed, and so why not?
Well, that was Johan Alfredo explaining why he wanted to get up the road today. The only wildcard team that didn't get a rider in the break was Cofidis. They were presumably putting all of their eggs in Christophe Laporte's basket.
Yeah, maybe just to sum down quickly, the reason why you had Kevin Le Danois, he lives in the area with his father Yvon Le Danois. You know, they live really in this area. And Direct Energy, the team of Jérôme Cousin, that as everybody knows, based in Vendée.
Well, yeah, Jean-René Bernadeau, the boss of that team, got a rapturous reception from some people in the start village this morning. Yeah, those three riders, as soon as the flag came in from Christian Prudhomme in the sunroof of the race car number one, those three accelerated and everybody else just let them go. But the peloton didn't give them much leeway. They were never going to stay away. The gap was kept to just a few minutes at its most. First of all, Le Danois was the first to drop off and get recaptured with around 20 kilometres to go. That left Alfredo and Cousin, who were out in front, till around 10 kilometres to go. And that really threw the race into quite a frantic period, everyone trying to move up. And that's when the crashes happened. We know Chris Froome hit the deck. We've seen the video on social media from Velon. Froome is trying to move up the right-hand side of the road, runs out of space and is turfed onto the verge. He lost time, 51 seconds, in fact. Adam Yates also lost time. He was caught behind crashes, as was Richie Porte. So those three riders have conceded time to the likes of Vincenzo Nibali, Romain Bardet, Tom Dumoulin, Rigoberto Urán, who will count today as a successful one because they avoided all the trouble. Nairo Quintana had an even worse day because with around 3.5 kilometres to go, he had a rear wheel puncture. And we were all speculating, well, why didn't he just roll on for another couple of hundred metres, few hundred metres, until he was inside 3 kilometres to go and then claim a mechanical and get the same time as the riders you've been with.
I talked to Eusebio Unzué, the Movistar manager at the end of the stage at his bus, and he said he was not a puncture, actually. He said that apparently Nairo rode straight into one of those traffic islands they have on the roads, near in towns like Fontenay-le-Comte, and apparently his front wheel was absolutely destroyed. The back wheel was not in the better shape, and actually he just couldn't go on. Otherwise, said Eusebio, he would have of course gone to the 3K's limit and not lost any time.
At the finish line in Fontenay-le-Comte, it was a win for Fernando Gaviria on his first day in the Tour de France. He won for Quickstep Floors ahead of the world champion Peter Sagan and Marcel Kittel of Katusha. Gaviria takes the yellow jersey, the first Colombian, and in fact, well, the first Colombian since Victor Hugo Pena in 2003 to wear the yellow jersey, and only the second in the Tour's history from that country. Gaviria really following in the footsteps of Marcel Kittel, and I guess before that, Mark Cavendish, in winning a stage for Quickstep Floors. But the day was all about those time gaps for Chris Froome, Richie Porte in particular, and Nairo Quintana, of course. Finally, Richard, although all the riders made it to the finish, their worst of the fallers was Lawson Craddock of Team EF Education First. He crashed around halfway through the stage, got back on his bike and rode the last 100 kilometres with a fractured scapula. That's up in his shoulder. He has been to hospital to check out the damage, but he wants to continue the race tomorrow.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel. Explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
I'm Simon from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that riding's the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world and we host 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Yes, what better way to experience and enjoy the Tour de France than with Rafa at a Rafa clubhouse, if you're near one, or on a Rafa ride. we're very grateful, of course, to our headline sponsor, Rafa, for their support, which helps us be here covering the Tour de France and bringing you these daily episodes.
It was chaotic, and we're still really trying to understand really what happened, because there were a lot of isolated crashes. Egan Bernal came off as well, I think, before Froome. He lost a lot of time in the end, the young Colombian. A bad day for Team Sky. You know, Geraint Thomas, their plan B, finished in that first group. In fact, he was up there in 14th, riding well alongside the likes of Nibali, who was 11th on the stage. Jakob Fuglsang up there, 9th on the stage. I mean, Rafał Majka, 10th on the stage. So some of these guys had a good day, Romain Bardet as well. But a few of those main contenders, you know, Richie Porte, Adam Yates, Chris Froome, 51 seconds is a considerable chunk of time to lose. And, you know, we look back at the Giro, and Froome had a pretty unpleasant start to Giro with a couple of crashes, but 51 seconds is a big chunk of time, and he was not at all happy when he got back to the team bus. He was really, you know, jersey was ripped. It was quite a heavy fall. Yeah,
lots of blood coming from his right elbow, actually. So it more than just, you know,
painful
scratches.
Yeah,
yeah, pretty
absolutely
painful.
And it was a heavy fall. What was surprising when we saw the footage, and it was Rick Zabel that seemed to knock him off the road, was that it's quite unusual to see Froome not following a teammate. You know, he was on his own, and it was chaotic. And again, it was then surprising to see Quintana stop and not have any teammates. They had a lot of bad luck, the Movistar. Yeah. They had a lot of riders with problems.
But Eusebio Unzué told me, you know, there was no question that the Mikel Landa or Alejandro Valverde would wait for Nairo Quintana. He told me, co-leaders means co-leaders. I mean, this is, you know, Spanish wisdom, meaning, you know, if one of those guys is in trouble, you know, none of the others will help him. So it's part of the problem of having three leaders. You know, they might have eight leaders that they'll be in a bit of a mess. The interesting thing about the chaos in the finale there is I thought that the 3K's rule had been imposed precisely to avoid team leaders and sprinters mixing up together and crashing. And obviously, it didn't change anything. Remember, it was a 1K rule in the old days, and then sprinters complained that, you know, they couldn't do the sprints normally because the team leaders were there as well, and it created a real problem. And obviously, if you look at the results of the stage today, there are more GC leaders in the top 10 than sprinters. So obviously, the 3 kilometers rule didn't change anything.
Well, all it's done is push that tense period of the race just a bit further from the finish line, hasn't it? And once those breakaway riders were caught, suddenly, you know, the sprinters teams don't want anyone else getting away. All of the favourites want to get up to the front. I mean, Froome was making quite a stealthy move up to get towards the front to keep out of trouble, as they all want to do. And there is an argument for saying, well, maybe just hang back a bit. But of course, on a stage like today, with changes of direction, I mean, the wind wasn't up, so it was a pretty benign stage. I mean, if the wind had blown, as the race organisers no doubt would have hoped, with the stage hugging the coast for so long, it could have been really carnage out there. And in fact,
it was
carnage in a very condensed period of time, the last 10 kilometers. And so even though, you know, the time gaps are considerable, they may reflect that actually they got away pretty lightly. And when you look at the riders who have lost time, I mean, Movistar, Team Sky and BMC Racing, so that's Quintana, Froome and Porte, you know, they will do well in the team time trial on Monday. So, you know, Bardet and to a lesser degree, perhaps Dumoulin, they're the riders who tonight will probably be feeling quite satisfied. But they're going to hand back some of that advantage in a couple of days' time anyway. So, certainly not race-defining.
No,
but
team time trial will be close, though. You know, it'll be seconds, I think, but among those top teams. Mark Soler, you know, the other Movistar rider, lost almost 2.5 minutes today. So did Kwiatkowski, you know, good guys who are, you expect to be up there, did lose quite a considerable amount of time today. And Valverde and Landa finished in that front group, but there was nobody else there from Movistar. They were all caught up by crashes.
It puts into jeopardy as well. I mean, on top of the 3K's rule, the trimming down of teams to eight riders, because it was meant to avoid this kind of big scrums of 220 guys on the finish. Well, we have 22 guys, you know, less than in the past, and we have crashes again. And on top of that, it's probably one of the reasons why we have fewer teammates, you know, waiting for the leaders to get back to the front.
Francois, you spoke to Chris Froome and Richie Port at the finish. Shall we hear from both of them now?
Sure.
First Froome and then Richie Port.
Yeah, just obviously came off in the last 10Ks there. Saw there were a lot of crashes out there today, but just one of those things. I mean, we always knew the first few days are going to be tricky, going to be sketchy, and that's part of the game, unfortunately.
Were you a bit further back than you would have liked to have been at that point?
I mean, we were right at the front part of the peloton there, I'd say the top third, so I mean, there wasn't too much more the guys could have done. It was getting quite chaotic with some of the sprinters there, but that's bike racing. I'm just grateful I'm not injured in any way. And still a lot of road to cover before we get to Paris, obviously.
I don't really know what happened, to be honest. It's just one of those things. One minute it's all okay, and next thing there's a crash in front, and there's a few more crashes on the way in.
So mentally, how do you deal with it? Frustrating, or a bit of consolation, the fact that a lot of other GC guys went?
Yeah, I mean, it's there's other guys there, some worse off than me. So it's the first day of the tour. It's not ideal, but it's a long way, and it's just nice to finally start the race.
Richie, you've been in a situation, I guess, in your career already where these early losses have happened, but you've been able to contain yourself and move on. I mean, is that, I guess, past experience can help you sort of move on for this?
Yeah, it's definitely swings and roundabouts this race. I mean, guys took time today, but who's to say the same doesn't happen to them tomorrow? But, you know, the guys were good around me today, and it's a shame, but we'll see how the next days go.
Chute à l'arrière du peloton, Cycling Podcast team car at the back of the pack, please.
That's the voice of Seb Piquet, race radio at the Tour de France, to remind us to tell you that this episode of the Cycling Podcast from the Tour de France is sponsored by Harry's Razors. Now, before I packed to come to the Tour, I wrote myself a long list of things to bring, still managed to forget a couple of things. Richard, clearly you didn't forget your razor, but did you have to write a list?
No, I don't write a list, Lionel. I just pack. I just go ahead and buffalo it and pack all the things that I need. And as it happens, on the eve of the Tour, I received a package in the mail, and it was a brand new Harry's razor, a beautiful silver-handled, German-engineered Harry's razor with two spare blades and shaving gel as well, and a protective case for the blades. And it is very nice. It's an extremely good razor, as well as being great value. I have to say, I'm very, very happy with it. It feels great. And I had an idea.
What's your idea?
Well, we're going to have a few episodes sponsored by Harry's at the Tour de France, and I thought we could try out the razor on Francois. I mean, let him use it rather than hold him down and shave his face.
Well, that's a good idea, Rich. Francois is the smoothest man in the press room, so it would be interesting to find out whether the Harry's razor meets his exacting criteria. But if you out there, listeners, would like to try the Harry's razor, you can do so. Get started shaving with Harry's today by claiming your trial set for £3.95. You get weighted ergonomic handle, 5 precision engineered blades with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You can support our podcast and get your trial set delivered to you by going to harrys.com/cycling right now. That's harrys.com/cycling.
Well, that sound that we heard there was some booing that was captured by you, Francois, at the start, at the podium, when Chris Froome went to sign on. And we can only imagine that it was, of course, to the case that's been hanging over Froome for 9 months, the salbutamol case, which was cleared and stopped just on the eve of the Tour de France. He's in the clear, you know. There's no case to answer for him anymore, and yet there's the hangover from it, and there's a sense that there's quite a lot of hostility out there towards him.
Yeah, it was pretty strange. It was. I would answer yes and no to your question, because obviously Chris Froome was expecting, you know, booing from the French crowd, and everybody was saying, oh, maybe, you know, he could have been trouble. I mean, being booed, maybe thrown things at, and you know, the security around him has been enhanced considerably. But the funny thing was, Yes, when he rode towards the podium, there were spontaneous boos, like boo, you know, and all of a sudden, when all the cameras and all the journalists saw that this flock of guys booing, they just turned towards them to take pictures and, you know, and shoot, you know, videos of these guys booing, and it was kind of in the end it was kind of booing on demand, you know, because the guys were there, you know, calming down, and it was kind of like at the Cannes Film Festival, like when the Oscars, you know, they scream for the actors, and it was like, please boo. And
you're suggesting the media were orchestrating this.
Well, that's exactly what I'm saying. You know, it was
standing there with their recorders, Francois.
You understand? Well, I was far away. Okay. I was following Chris, you know, but they were actually, you could tell that these guys were booed at Cannes down. When they saw this media scrum coming towards them, they were over making it, you know, like, boo, boo. I mean, you had these old ladies, you know, booing Chris Froome. So it's kind of a joke, really, you know.
We had a quick chat with Seb Piquet last night, and he's the voice of Race Radio, of course, and he was talking about Alberto Contador in 2011 when he had his clenbuterol case still hanging over him, and he was booed at the start in this region as well, in the Vendée. And he recently said that it was the worst moment of his career. Now, don't want to draw parallels between the two cases, but it does seem that Froome has this target on his back. And we don't want to talk about this Salbutamol case and the resolution of it, because we did that at length in our last podcast before the Tour de France. You know, we've had quite a lot of reaction to that and to what Jonathan Vaught has said in that episode. You know, and it's a curious one, because what I'm finding and what I think everybody's seeing is that although this case has been closed and there is no case to answer for Chris Froome, and it looks very much like the test is flawed, and perhaps the rules around salbutamol could change as a result of this, there still is a lingering perception that Froome has somehow got away with it. And in a lot of the discussions of the case, people are, you know, saying, well, yes, Froome has been cleared, but blah blah blah. And I think whatever your thoughts about Froome, whatever suspicion or skepticism you might have, I think we have to look at this case and say it was the right decision. It does look as though it was the right decision, and we've got to separate that from any other, you know, suspicion or skepticism there may be.
Well, certainly having seen the wider reaction, and particularly the UCI's lengthy analysis of the case and how the decision was arrived at.
I mean, the timeline was quite interesting.
The timeline of things, yeah, it was interesting. But the problem is that, you know, the public, you know, the general public is a large body of people, and some will be very hardline and will think that this is no smoke without fire type case. Some will think exactly that Team Sky have bought their way to inverted commas justice, and some will just plain not like Chris Froome and will think
that this not helped by the UCI president David Lapartey on some of his comments.
Well, not helped by a lot of things, but not least cycling's cycling's past. I mean, the chances are that Chris Froome will get booed, Team Sky will get booed. They have been in the past. The fact that they dominate and do so well makes them unpopular with some people, as it is.
My impression is that, more generally speaking, I mean, this is cycling and this is the world of sport and doping and everything, but it's a more general problem. We live in the age of belief and not the age of reason, you know, even in politics or anything. These days, people don't trust anything, don't trust authorities, they don't trust politicians, they don't trust authority, they don't trust justice, they don't trust the police, they don't trust the anti-doping, and they will trust the doping authorities less and less after a case like this. So it's just now a case of belief. Do you believe in Chris Froome, or do you not believe in Chris Froome? And that's unfortunately the way most people think, even when they vote these days.
What I object to, I suppose, is this case being used as part of the case for the prosecution, because we have to draw a line under it. And I think, you know, even the most hardened cynics, some of them are accepting that this case was not a case of doping. You know, I think we have to acknowledge that, and
that's
I think
right.
it would
but
be wrong not to
Alessandro
acknowledge that.
Alessandro Petacchi's case was not obviously a case of doping either, and he was banned. So there was somewhere a lack of justice, and this is probably what makes the perception complicated.
I think that's right, but I think if Petacchi didn't get justice, that doesn't mean that Chris Froome shouldn't get justice.
That's
now.
Right, but the argument is that Petacchi didn't have the money that Team Sky have, and we're back to point. To the start.
Yeah. Shall we move on?
Yeah, let's move on. That is very true, but I think I echo Richard's point. You can't say, because of a case in the past, that Chris Froome should be punished on the basis of how a case in the past was concluded.
Sure.
I mean,
my position on this, and I've always said it about doping is a legal issue. Chris Froome has been cleared. End of the story, right? But even though it's the case, does it affect my belief in Chris Froome or my disbelief in Chris Froome? It's another story.
I agree with that, but I don't. You know, I think that this is it's separate to
sure.
any other questions people have about Chris Froome.
Let's draw a metaphorical line in the sand on that.
I'm sure, but
until
the interesting
tomorrow.
Thing is, it will become a sort of moot point if Froome. Isn't in contention to win this race. Mm. Nobody will talk about it.
Ah, but it will be fanned back into...
If he comes into contention for the race. If he is not in contention for this race, it will not be talked about. He will not be booed, I don't think. You know, I think it's dependent very much on how he performs and how Team Sky perform.
Yeah.
But a team that did perform extremely well today, as they've performed all season, Quickstep, really phenomenal. And Gaviria, you know, we've expected a lot from him. He was fantastic at the Giro last year. This is his first Tour de France. He wins on day one, but it was a real team performance, and they rode exceptionally well. When you watch the overhead shots of the lead out, it was they had bodies up there, lots of bodies. They had Bob Jungels doing a great job. They had Yves Lampaert doing a great job. Philippe Gilbert, just quality riders who were there to support him and did a fantastic job.
Yeah, they put everything behind Gaviria. They've come here without really a GC contender at all.
Bob Jungels,
yeah. I guess, yeah. But I'm top 10, I guess, yeah. Okay, I'll take that back. they're stage hunters, really, aren't they? And they've got a lot of stage-winning potential, not least in Gaviria. But the step up from the Giro to the Tour is not inconsiderable. It didn't follow that just because he'd won three stages of the Giro last year, he would hit the ground, and run quite so fast here. He's still only young, 23 years old, and the fact that that he is stepping into the shoes of Marcel Kittel in many ways, because Kittel won five stages here for Quickstep last year, and that's quite an act to follow, and to beat not just Peter Sagan but Kittel, Christoph Laporte. Groenewegen was hotly fancied for the stage today.
Tom Tadpole, we expected more from him, I think.
Yeah, sixth place, and a few of the sprinters, including Arnaud Démare, were ruled out.
Arnaud Démare crashed. Yeah,
he had a crash. One of the first crashes, wasn't it? But Gaviria and Quickstep really executed that very, very well. This morning, I spoke to their sports director, Brian Holm, and
took a picture of his shoes.
I did take a picture of his shoes. Yes, because they were quite striking.
Yeah,
they were.
I saw some people on Twitter thinking they were my shoes. I don't wear these kind of shoes, guys.
They were suede burgundy moccasins with a quite a natty kind of gold bar across the front. No socks, of course. I mean, you've got to be confident to pull that off. That's a sort of Fernando Gaviria of shoe wearing, really, from Bayern Holm. But I spoke to him very briefly at the start this morning. There aren't many riders who start the Tour de France with the opportunity to win a stage on their very first day, but Fernando Gaviria has that chance.
Sure, and he knows it. I'm quite sure he feels the pressure. He's a bit nervous. He said also he's nervous, and he knows he's one of the favourites today. And to be honest, he got all the reasons in the world to be a bit nervous, doesn't he? That's Tour de France. It's the biggest race of the year now, and stage one, to have the yellow jersey, I mean, that would be something he'd have the rest of his life.
Brian Holm was in a great mood at the finish, and he said that he will continue wearing the shoes for as long as Quickstep have got the yellow jersey. So I'll check to see whether
Your
he's wearing them tomorrow.
Smell a bit, aren't
I don't know. I imagine the Quick-Step cars are air-conditioned.
True.
You know.
True. Well, at the finish, I spoke to Yves Lampaert, riding in his Belgian champions jersey, of course, and it's his first Tour de France. And he rode very well, did a fantastic job to set up Gaviria. Richesi was the rider I didn't mention earlier. Max Richesi was up there as well, helping out. So it was a very, very strong team. Nicky Terpstra was the other one. Let's hear from Yves Lampaert, and then we'll hear from Patrick Lefebvre, the team boss who you spoke to at the finish line. So Yves Lampaert and then Patrick Lefebvre.
Yes, we had a perfect lead out, like it's written in the books. And Nicky and Bob did a wonderful job until the last K. And I could start at 800 meters from the finish line. And I don't know if you saw it on television, but it was more uphill than I expected. So it was a hard uphill finish. And I was from the opinion I have to save my teammates as much as possible. And I could hold it until 300 meters to go.
I mean, Gaviria, he likes to go quite long, doesn't he? He's got a long sprint.
I think that's something from the track he learned. He's one of the world's best track riders, and especially on the sprint and the one lap number. I don't know what it's called in English. But he's a really strong guy, especially on uphill finishes, and it's wonderful that he can win.
A lot of very good sprinters here, but how important was it for Quickstep to dominate in the way they did there and for Fernando to win?
Yeah, for sure. All the best sprinters in the world are here, so we have to show immediately that we are maybe the best lead-out team of this Tour de France, and that they have to look at us in the race. And I think we did a wonderful job this first stage, and we will try to do it a few more times.
Patrick, you've won with Mark Cavendish, you've won with Marcel Kittel, now with Fernando Gaviria. You're making it look easy.
You forget some guys. I win already since 93 with Cipollini, with Steels. I always liked to have a sprinter in my team because it brings some... It gets away the stress of the team, winning.
Winning takes away the stress. Well, you get one win and everyone relaxes?
No. The last thing you may do is relaxing. Tomorrow is another day, and we have to be focused. We are a team who always takes his responsibility, so we're going to defend the yellow, and we will see tomorrow. What we saw the last month in cycling is that there are a lot of sprinters and a lot of variation of winners. One day we were beaten in Switzerland by Sagan, the other day by De Mar, who crashed today, another race by Groenewegen. So I think it has to be very exciting for the public.
A lot of pressure on a young man's shoulders. His first Tour de France, his first day, and he wins. How do you keep the pressure off his shoulders?
Well, you know, tactical-wise, I'm not involved too much anymore, but if an important race, I have always the last word. And I told the guys yesterday evening, listen, don't be too stressed. You only have to be very nervous if you see me panicking. But panic is a very bad advisor, as you know. I said, forget the 5 victories of Kittel, forget everything you did before. Today, we are again to zero, and we're going to try to perform, and that's it.
How difficult is it for the other riders to adapt to having a new sprinter, someone else to lead out?
I think my team is new already for years, and if you saw what a beautiful match I did with taking Viviani. He's, I think, 13 victories, champion of Italy. I think Fernandez looked more or less on his 10th or 11th. So, yeah, I am a happy man.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Kiss goodbye to stomach problems with the world's first truly isotonic gel. Science in Sport Go Energy Isotonic. Before you hit the wall, hit back.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science and Sport for supporting the Cycling Podcast. We're very grateful to them. You'll hear a range of messages from Science and Sport throughout the Tour de France, telling you about some of their products, all of which you can get for 25% off at scienceandsport.com with the code SISCP25. That's SISCP25. That's at scienceandsport.com. Now, we heard before the interval there from Yves Lampaert and Patrick Lefebvre, and you had something to add, I think, Francois.
Yeah, I talked this morning to Christophe Laporte, the Cofidis team leader, who replaces Nasser Bouhanni as the leading sprinter for Cofidis, and he was telling me, I was asking him about the eight-man teams and would it affect the sprinters' trains, and he told me, he told me there were no trains anymore. He said, sprints have changed, and now it's almost just a sprinter and his lead-out man, and there's no more trains. Well, unfortunately for Christophe Laporte and other guys, there is one train left, and that's the Quickstep train.
it was very impressive. I mean, I think Kittel be pretty happy with third, but Laporte, decent fifth. I mean, I thought that was okay. I don't know if anybody closed the door on him in the run-in. Little joke there on Laporte. But Marcel Kittel, who's been out of sorts really this year, I spoke to Ian Boswell at the start this morning, his Katusha teammate, Katusha Alpecin teammate, and Boswell said that Kittel had given them a little talk last night and, said that we start with a clean slate. Whatever issues we've had so far this year, we start with a clean slate. Tomorrow we have a chance of winning a stage and taking the yellow jersey. And of course, as you said earlier, Lionel, he won five stages last year. And I think third today shows that he's got the condition and the form, and he's not that far away. Some of the other sprinters are surprised at Groenewegen down in six. Cavendish wasn't there. He had a problem with his chain, I think, didn't he? Broke a chain. So, but I'd have been surprised to have seen Cavendish up there. I think it takes him these days a few stages to find his sprinting legs.
Yeah, Brian Holm made the point that Gaviria is almost like Cavendish from 10 years ago, but Cavendish has always taken a few days to get into his rhythm. It's impressive when a sprinter... Apart from 2016, of course, yeah, when the last time the yellow jersey was up for grabs on an opening road stage. But do you know, either of you, the last Tour de France debutant to win their very first stage of a Tour de France?
Fabian Cancellara, 2004.
Was that a prologue?
It was
a
prologue.
It was, yeah.
And
yeah.
Boardman in 94 was,
and
also
David Miller
prologue
in 2000, of course.
That wasn't a prologue. That was a
time trial.
Was I right?
You were right. Yeah, I need to go back and look. Maybe the listeners can, somebody can
do your work,
do
for
my
you,
work
Lionel,
for me overnight. Tell me who was the last.
Not only do you not drop literary references into your tale of the attack, but you get the listeners to then do your research for
yep.
you.
Anyone that can tell me who was the last debutant to win on their very first day in the Tour de France, but it has to be a road stage, not a time trial, we'll send you a prize. Tweet us at cycling_podcast.
Hey, don't forget, you can listen to Kilometre Zero, our morning show, every weekday during the 2018 Tour de France. Kilometre Zero is supported by Hansgrohe.
Well, that was quite a quirky little call out there for our Kilometre Zero series, which begins on Monday, and it runs Monday to Friday throughout the Tour de France. That's 15 episodes, and we're delighted that they are sponsored at this year's tour by Hansgrohe, and they are a new sponsor for us, and we're looking forward to working with them on these. The first one that will come out on Monday, we're doing a lot of interviews for that today, is on some of the debutants, 35 debutants in this year's tour, from the youngest man in the race, Egan Bernal, up to Rory Sutherland, who I think is 36 now, finally riding his first tour. And it'll be a series looking at some of those guys before and after stage one. And we've got some other ideas that will follow on from that first one. Lionel, you've been working away at your spreadsheet of ideas.
Yeah, Kilometre Zero, Monday to Friday mornings, all 3 weeks of the race.
We must say also thanks to Skoda, who... We're in the Skoda Karoq car that I used at the Women's Tour recently. We've kind of rebadged it a little bit, and we're here at the Tour de France. But thanks very much to them for their support as well.
Francois, are you comfortable in your little nest in the back already?
Yeah, I must say I had I love Skoda cars, and I mean they've been great for cycling. But I had a memory of criterium of the Dauphiné like 10 years ago when the car suspension was so soft and comfy that it made me kind of seasick in the mornings. But then and it's not the case here. So I mean they changed something. It's even better. And so far I kind of slept a little little bit on the way to lunch. So, yeah, good.
If you're listening, Francois is available for endorsements and to maybe feature in any advertising campaigns you've got coming up. Anything else? Any other business from today? I mean, at the start, it was very familiar kind of tour feel to it, but quite low-key, like it sometimes is at the start, such as it was in 2011 and 2013 in Corsica as well.
Well, the thing was, it was on the island, wasn't it?
Exactly.
And we had to be across the bridge by 8:15 at the latest, which meant we were up at, I was up at 6:15 this morning. We left our hotel at 7. That's quite unusual to have such an early start at the tour.
I saw Ciro Scognamiglio, our old friend, he sidled up to me on the island and said, "How are you, my friend? I am not how you say an early birda." So he didn't like the early start, but back to normal tomorrow. But I spoke to a few people for this Compton Zero mainly, including Egan Bernal, who I hadn't spoken to before, the Colombian rider who's 21. And I put this on Twitter, but he was really nervous. He was shaking, like really physically shaking. He was putting on mitts and really couldn't, you know, it was just quite a stark kind of reminder that. And I guess this was something we talked about. A lot of these guys have never been to the tour before. Mm-hmm. You know, it's completely new to them. Not only are they riding it for the first time, but it's a whole new experience.
Yeah, they've seen it on TV, but it's not the same. I talked to Tobias Ludvigsen, and the most interesting things he talked about was the England match, but we said we wouldn't talk
about
it.
Can't talk about that.
So we won't. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's obviously for them, it's a different world completely. I mean, Alfredo last year was a debutant, and he had these, you know, ups and downs. He even cried at the finish, and he said again today, you know, when I talked to him in the morning, that that experience of the first tour and how to handle despair, because he said at times when you get up in the morning and you look at a road book, your main anguish is not even to know whether you're going to shine, take the breakaway, or win the stage. Your anguish is, can I make it inside the time limit? So, I mean, for these guys, they're really tackling kind of a monster, and you need to, you know, to kind of tame the beast and tame the beast inside of you. So, yeah.
That's the bell for swimming, Francois.
Is that the bell for swimming?
About to start.
Before we go, one man we haven't talked about much today is Peter Sagan, the world champion, back in the tour, having been disqualified last year. Second place to Gaviria. No real answer to Gaviria's kind of pure speed on that finish today. We had been led to believe that the uphilly bit was perhaps a bit closer to the line than it actually was. So maybe if it had finished just over the top of the brow of that hill, Sagan would have been the bigger favourite. I spoke to Bora Hansgrohe's manager, Ralph Denk, at the finish, and he was in a fairly philosophical mood.
Gaviria was better today, eh? It's easy explanation. And I think Peter did everything right, the team as well, and we're looking forward for the next stage, but we are not nervous. So,
are you quite relaxed because there are many more opportunities in this first week for Sagan?
Yeah, I'm relaxed, and I see also to the stages like Mürtre Bretagne or the day before, it's even harder as today, and so yeah, we will see.
And I know it's in a week's time and a lot could happen, but the cobble stage, how important is that for your team?
Very important, because already today we had in the GC a small split, or small gaps, and Rafa is already in the top 10. He finished 10 today, as same time as the winner, and this is good for us, and we have to protect him in the Roubaix stage.
So will Rafa be protected and Sagan left to try to win the stage on his own?
This would be perfect. Maybe you should do the DS.
Well, guys, I'm off to be Bora Hansgrohe's DS for the rest of the Tour de France.
Is that
no?
Really?
No. I don't think I'd be very good. I'm not calm under pressure. Communications. Not good at making decisions. Terrible driver.
All the ingredients that you need.
Well,
confrontational.
I don't carry off those Brian Holmes shoes either.
I know a couple of team managers who are bad drivers. I mean, no names, but
I'm not a bad driver. You're right. I just should we go right? Oh, is it this? Is it this exit? Is it that exit? The drivers in the peloton.
As in Israel at the start of the Giro. Oh, shall we drive over this bit of desert? Anyway, that's a whole other story.
But Sagan. I joked before the start of the race that he could win all of the first nine stages. The terrain suits him, maybe not the team time trial.
The dangers of speculating,
but obviously there are better chances for him than today. Probably the two stages in Brittany, maybe even the Mur de Bretagne, and certainly the cobbled stage. So he'll be off the mark soon. But what will be interesting now is to see whether Gaviria can win again, and whether he can start putting together a bid for the green jersey, which Brian Holm also told me today is kind of the long-term goal for the Tour. He went for that intermediate sprint behind the break just to get some points, even though it was so close to the finish. You know, that shows the confidence that he had and the team had to get some points on the board, and even though the sprint for the stage was going to be coming up within an hour's time.
I didn't tell you this, for the first time ever on the Tour, I had a chance to, you know, stand by and interview exclusively Peter Sagan.
Today?
Yeah, but only to find out he was actually a cardboard replica of the guy they put on the the bus every morning. It's the first time I've seen that, you know, like the...
It's quite confusing. It's caught me out a couple of times. I've seen Peter Sagan just standing there and then realise it was a cardboard cutout. There's some writers where you might prefer to interview a cardboard cutout. What do you reckon? Hey, you might get a more interesting interview.
Wow.
I had some one-on-one time with Peter Sagan yesterday, actually, for something else that we're doing. But, loads to come. Yep. Loads to come. We've been gathering stuff left, right, and centre. Well, let's go and enjoy this swimming pool.
Yeah, it's about time,
sounds
I think.
Like it sounds ridiculous, but this is not going to be the case every night, we assure you. There are some real stinkers coming up. And on that note, thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Francois.
Thank you.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, Rafa and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by Adam Bowie.